Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox. I'm the Compliance Evangelist, and I'd like to welcome you to episode 339 of the FCPA Compliance Report. Today, my podcast is sponsored by the ARC Group. The ARC Group is the publisher of my latest book, 2016, The Year in Corporate FCPA Enforcement. This is the only book which has been released which reviews the most significant year in FCPA enforcement, both in terms of monetary sanctions and number of cases brought forward. The subtitle of the book is Cardinal and Provident, and that explains why I found 2016 to be the most significant year for the compliance practitioner on lessons learned from FCPA enforcement actions. I urge you to take a look at this book. You can find out more about it by checking out the ARC Group's website, which is ark-group.com. That's ARC, as in Noah's Ark, -group.com. The book title is 2016, The Year in Corporate FCPA Enforcement. Take a look at it. I think you will find it to be incredibly useful for you in your compliance practice. Today I have with me a very interesting guest, Ed Boothusiam, who is with the BRG Group. BRG is a business transformation group that utilizes a data-driven and expert approach to help companies and their stakeholders deliver sustainable results with speed and transparency. We talk about the work of BRG, how BRG helps companies to drive the value proposition in a world of anti-corruption compliance, how you can utilize value-driven propositions to further operationalize your compliance program, and how compliance can become a more integrated part of your business process. It's a fascinating interview. It comes in at around 20 minutes. This is Tom Fox. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, back for another episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. Today, you are in for a treat as I have with me Ed Boothusiam, I hope I got that right, from BRG, and he heads up the Corporate Compliance and Risk Management Group. He's going to talk to us about the identification, assessment, and management of risk, largely in the healthcare space, but also in other industries. He's going to talk about how he and his team of 10 professionals work to help bring a value-driven proposition to compliance, and how he, in the healthcare space, does what I think is operationalization of compliance to really help businesses operate more efficiently and, at the end of the day, more profitably. So, Ed, with that somewhat long-winded introduction, welcome and thank you for taking the time to visit with me today.
Thank you, Tom. It's my pleasure.
Ed, you've been in the legal slash compliance space in both national and international corporations before you went to BRG. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to BRG.
Sure. Well, I took a rather circuitous path, but I actually out of law school, I went to Penn Law School, and upon graduation, I ended up working for Fried Frank in Washington, D.C., and I worked in D.C., I worked in New York, and then I went back to D.C. With another law firm at the time, Dickstein Shapiro. My focus at the time was international business, which comprised, you know, trade, customs, corporate, SEC, various kinds of subgroups within the corporate space. And I ended up getting an offer to go to Smith Kline Beecham in 1990. I moved from D.C. to Philadelphia, and I actually spent the next 20 years at various iterations of Smith Kline. I actually joined when it was Smith Kline Beckman, and then we spun off Beckman and Allergan. We merged with Beecham and to form Smith Kline Beecham, and eventually Glaxo Welcome to form GlaxoSmithKline. And during my tenure there, I held a number of positions, you know, including I was the head of global transactions. I ran a transactions group that focused on all the different types of transactions globally to support a research-based pharmaceutical enterprise, and eventually moved from there to becoming the general counsel of R&D and vaccines, where in addition to the GC, I was also the chief compliance officer and had a team of compliance professionals and lawyers and paraprofessionals working for me. Now, I ended up leaving Smith Kline in 2010 to join Danaher Corporation, where I was the general counsel of Danaher's life sciences businesses. I was based in Washington and Southern California, and that was from 2010 to 2013. And right around that time, I was approached by BRG with an exciting opportunity to come and join a very dynamic and fast-growing advisory services, expert services company to build a compliance and risk management service offering in the context of this new but growing firm. And that's when I made the move in January 2013 and joined BRG. And that's how I got there. And I'm happy to say that I've had, you know, 4.5 very happy and productive years there and counting.
So, Ed, I was wondering if you could describe for us the group you head up, what its primary focus is, and the types of assignments you guys typically take.
Sure, Tom, I'd be happy to. The name of our group is Corporate Compliance and Risk Management. And within the group and our 10 professionals, we cover the gamut of compliance and risk management services, advisory services in the healthcare space and beyond. Our primary focus, as you mentioned in your introduction, is in healthcare. And in that sense, we advise pharmaceutical manufacturers, device manufacturers, but also, you know, DME, you know, durable medical equipment manufacturers, and really the whole suite of options in the healthcare manufacturing space. But in addition to that, we also advise direct billers, whether they be hospitals or physician practice groups or other kinds of healthcare providers and health plans. So we really do cover in the healthcare space A to Z. And the primary focus of the group is advisory consulting in the compliance space. And really what that means is we help companies design, develop, and implement programs designed at managing, you know, a program that has to comply with whatever regulatory regime that they're subject to. We're guided by industry standard. We're guided by OIG government standards. But essentially what we do is we build programs, we assess the strength of programs, we audit programs, and really we conduct investigations with respect to transgressions that fall within the scope of those programs. I would say that's a large part of our practice. And basically it's really done in two ways. You know, one is direct B2B, which is discretionary on our clients' part, where they desire us to come in and take a look at their program. Maybe they just went through a merger or an acquisition. Maybe they have a new board of directors or a new member. Maybe they've entered a new business enterprise that's going to subject them to different regulations, and they desire an independent look, look-see to see, you know, if they are compliant or if not, what gaps need to be closed. So that's really the direct model where we work in a discretionary way with companies. But the flip side of that is we also work with companies in distress. And by distress, I mean the distress of a government investigation, whether it could be, you know, whether it's a DOJ or an EPA or an SEC or some other type of governmental agency that's investigating the company, where the strength, the relative strength or weakness of their compliance program could be a factor in the disposition of, you know, whatever legal matter they're in, pursuant to the federal sentencing guidelines, for example, where the government wants to test the strength of a compliance program to prove that a systemic problem doesn't exist. So we'll be brought in typically under privilege and through counsel at that point to conduct that so-called Phillip factor analysis. And, you know, in those situations, we'll assess the program, we'll meet with the government, whether it's the DOJ or the OIG or the EPA or the SEC, and we'll through counsel, we'll present the relative strength or weakness of a compliance program for the subject company. And hopefully that will merit a favorable exercise of discretion in the course of whatever proceeding they find themselves involved in.
So, Ed, one of the things that in my world of anti-corruption compliance, a new buzzword is operationalization. And this really came about in February when the Department of Justice released a document entitled Evaluation of Corporate Compliance Programs. And in reviewing your site and information on what you guys do prior to our podcast, it really seems like to me you guys are helping companies operationalize compliance in the healthcare space to help them run more efficiently. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
I think it's a very fair assessment, and I actually call it the industrialization of compliance as well. Because basically, Wei Chen, who, as your audience will know, as you know, who came over and actually is the OIG's compliance, DOJ's compliance executive, you know, it's her job and her staff's job to evaluate compliance programs. And she comes from industry, you know, she spent years at Pfizer, but she has an industrial background, as I do, as my team does. And basically what she's emphasizing is that, you know, it's more than writing down policies and procedures. It's more than, you know, delivering the Sermon on the Mount to the folks in the field. Operationalizing compliance really means that it needs to work on the ground floor to basically remediate or deter the action that it's directed at deterring. So to me, operationalizing compliance or industrializing compliance really means to introduce something into the company's culture that is meaningful and works to the same extent that other processes and procedures relative to its manufacturing operation work, or relative to whatever quality management system for an FDA regulated company works. It's got to be held to the same standard. And I actually applaud her, because I think one of the things I personally pride myself on, and my team on, is that I believe that we are industrial consultants or industrial trained consultants, where you've got to bring an industrial mindset into a company and speak their language. And again, operationalize something to the same extent as other things in their culture operationalized pursuant to their business process.
That really is a very unique perspective. And I would say that by making it a process and embedding it in the organization, you not only answer the questions that people like Wei Chin ask when they want to know how effective was your compliance program at the time of the incident, or more importantly, how effective is it now, but it's what the business wants, because the business wants you on the front lines with them, helping them make decisions, obviously in compliance with whatever the regulatory scheme, but also to help them do business more efficiently. So I really like your phrase, industrializing it.
And I think really what that means is you've got to make the business case to your business folks, you know, as to compliance. And it's one thing to have it, you know, reviewed or represent an ethereal set of rules and principles, that ethereal in the sense that it gains no traction, but to actually bring it down to the ground level. So from a business standpoint, you know, your business partners really do understand from a business process the importance of doing these various things and the risk of not doing them. And once you bring it down to the ground level and explain it in a way that they understand, it becomes part of the business fabric and it becomes part of the solution, is when these things tend to gain traction. It cannot be the compliance officer or the legal counsel just, again, delivering the Sermon on the Mount, bringing the tablets into a market, giving a speech for an hour of training and then leaving. You know, it needs to be embedded. It needs to be owned, co-owned by the business. It needs to be part of their fabric, and they need to be challenged to step up and assume that ownership role. And they need to be assessed based on the way in which they do that as well. So once it gets embedded in the culture and the fabric of the company is when it really does gain traction. And I think from that standpoint, too many times I've seen this myself personally, when I've delivered training in over 77 different countries and 7 different languages. And basically, you know, if you're not sensitive to how people learn in those cultures, you're not going to be doing an effective way of training, because, you know, you've got to understand in a particular market how people learn, what resonates with them. And then once you hit that button, and you see the light bulb go off where they really do understand the importance of this, is when you gain traction. And it's got to be a lot more of a nuanced approach than I've seen in the past. I think companies are getting much better at doing that, but I also believe there still is a way to go.
So, Ed, when you started the podcast, you told us there were 10 professionals in your group. I was wondering if you might be able to talk about the roles or their different roles within the group and how they complement each other.
Sure. So in addition to myself, we have my partner, Janice Jacobs. And Janice is a certified professional coder. She is a former hospital compliance executive. And Janice's specialty is building and monitoring, auditing compliance programs in hospitals and other provider groups, be they physician groups, physician practice groups or behavioral health providers or other providers. And her group primarily focuses on billing and coding practice, making sure that the process is down from an anti-kickback risk, from a false claims risk, and they focus on those kinds of elements that form part of the DRG that's billed to the government, and they audit each step of the way, each part of that process. So, you know, Janice is a 25, 27-year professional who has held numerous senior positions in the provider community, and she heads up our provider-based compliance practice. In addition to that, I also have another one of my partners, Frank Stevens. Frank is a health plan compliance expert. So all the panoply of state insurance regulations to operate different kinds of insurance programs, be it medical, dental, behavioral, vision care, and all the rules and regulations both exist federally and on a state level, and they are numerous, they're voluminous. With respect to related party transactions and, you know, combining a retail operation with an insurance operation front to back. Frank Stevens is our health plan compliance expert. Frank's based in Southern California. Janice is based outside of Philadelphia. And my other partner, Katie Norris, comes from a pharmaceutical and medical device manufacturer background. And Katie is an expert, again, in pharmaceutical company and medical device company compliance programs. And that can range from, you know, building compliance programs to doing auditing and monitoring, conducting fair market value analyses for anti-kickback purposes. And my special focus tends to be the manufacturer area, but also the FCPA, third-party overseas transactional element, third-party relationships and building and designing and conducting investigations in that space.
Well, Ed, unfortunately, we're near the end of our time, but I was wondering if anyone wanted to get any more information on you or your group, BRG, or even follow up with any questions they might have of what you've talked to us about today, how they might do so.
Sure. Well, you could do so by either contacting me directly. And, you know, my work number is 610-639-1541, or they can visit our website, which can be located at www. That's funny. I've got to remember my own website. I never visit my own website, but our website is www.thinkbrg.com. And you'll find us and the other advisory practices on that link.
So I've been visiting with Ed Boothmesium. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
The head of
close enough.
Yeah. Well, with a name like Tom Fox, it's always challenging.
Exactly.
The head of corporate compliance and risk management at BRG. It's been a fascinating discussion on how he and his team really work to, he called it industrialize. I would say operationalize, but it is making compliance a business process, burning it into the DNA and very fabric of an organization so businesses will operate more efficiently and more profitably. Ed, this has been a great talk. I really look forward to continuing the conversation with you. This is Tom Fox again. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. I hope you'll check out my new book, 2016, The Year in Corporate FCPA Enforcement, Cardinal and Provident. It's listed on the ARC group. That's ARK-group.com. If you have listened to this podcast on iTunes, I would greatly appreciate it if you would rate our podcast, as it would help in our rankings and help get the word out about the oldest podcast in compliance. Finally, if you have any questions, please feel free to contact me at tfox@tfoxlaw.com. This is Tom Fox. Thank you very much for listening to this episode, and I hope you will join me again for another episode of the FCPA Compliance Report.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.